WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A New Carrollton police officer is indicted for second-degree assault, reckless endangerment, and misconduct in office after prosecutors say he handcuffed a person and put the person upside down in his police cruiser. They say this happened last June when Sergeant Jeffrey Harris was responding to a call about a suspicious person. State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy says Harris's alleged actions created substantial risk of death and serious physical injury to the victim. Ukrainian forces are trying to hold off Russian troops as they try to take over the eastern part of the country. U.S. defense officials think Ukrainian resolve may be helping the people keep control.
The Donbas in eastern Ukraine's been hammered by artillery fire to the point where President Zelensky said it looks like the Russians are doing everything to destroy any life there. But a senior U.S. defense official said Moscow's offensive is going slower than planned. And the UK's defense ministry says they believe Russian forces are suffering from weakened morale. Meanwhile, the United Nations is trying to broker a deal with Moscow to evacuate civilians from Mariupol. Much of the port city's been flattened, and residents are struggling with starvation. Jill Nato, Fox News.
A Riverdale man is found guilty of first-degree murder yesterday for killing his son's mother. Police found Ashley Solano dead in an apartment laundry room, suffering significant blunt force trauma in the head in May of 2016. Both her hands had been cut off. He admitted to throwing her hands in a nearby dumpster, and his blood and hers was on clothes he had hidden. State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy says a person who can commit a crime as heinous as this has no regard for human life and does not belong in the community. The man faces a potential maximum sentence of life in prison when he's sentenced in July. As opioid deaths continue to surge, local police are stepping in to collect unwanted prescriptions.
Keeping those medications out of the hands of those who may use them improperly, and also, again, disposing of them properly, make sure they don't end up in landfills.
For Drug Take Back Day today, Maryland State Police spokesperson Ron Snyder.
People can bring in their expired or unwanted prescription medications to the local police barrack.
In Virginia, drop unwanted meds at First Baptist Church in Alexandria or any Fairfax County police station. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
Nerd Prom is back tonight. The White House Correspondents' Dinner will be happening for the first time in 2 years and for the first time since 2016, a sitting president will attend. WMAL Sports, Juan Soto homered and the Nats pounded out a season-high 22 hits, ending an eight-game losing streak by beating the Giants 14-4. The Caps fell to the Rangers 3-2. They play the Panthers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs on Tuesday. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Fairfax, watch out for an accident on eastbound 66 near the Vienna Metro Station along the right side of the roadway. That has traffic jam from 123. In Annandale, on the inner loop of the Beltway approaching Gallows Road, an accident there now moved to the shoulder, but watch out for residual delays through the area. No other incidents reported on the Beltway at this time. A disabled vehicle is being reported on 270 southbound just prior to Quince Orchard Road. That is exit 11, but that is just affecting the right shoulder. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, mostly sunny, a high near 70. Tonight, partly cloudy, then a chance of showers with a low around 50. Tomorrow, a chance of showers, a high of 67. Right now, 47 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Saturday Morning Update, Hour 2. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, you're the White House correspondent, but I think probably the former resident of the White House is making as much news this week as the current one. That is President Trump on two fronts. First off, Kevin McCarthy and comments that he made about the president, and where do those two stand in their relationship at this point?
Very, very warm and fuzzy. It appeared as though President Trump might be a little upset with the tape showing that Kevin McCarthy did indeed promise some Republican colleagues he would ask for the then President Trump's resignation on January 6th. He never did that. And in fact, President Trump said that they spoke days after January 6th, and he was very supportive, Trump said, once he realized the truth of the matter, that is the outburst that occurred on Capitol Hill. And remember, these are Donald Trump's words. That probably snuffed out any flame of rebellion among Republicans in the House. Now, on the other hand, pundits and others were saying that McCarthy was caught in a lie, that he didn't actually do what he said he was going to do. Most of the Republicans I talked to said he's not in any trouble. One, Trump is not mad at him. Two, as one lawmaker put it, Kevin McCarthy has invested so much in his colleagues in terms of helping them through the political thicket and raising money. They are not going to turn on him over this. And finally, if there's any anger, one lawmaker said, it's over whomever was brought into the room and recorded a private conversation. Now, initially, the number one suspect was Congresswoman Liz Cheney of Wyoming, no friend of the minority leader. She flatly denied that it was her, but others believe it might be a staffer. We're eventually going to find out these things, but for now, Kevin McCarthy is home free and on his way to be Speaker of the House if Republicans win control in November.
I guess it does help not to have Donald Trump mad at you. There's some fireworks in Ohio. It all culminates in the primaries on Tuesday. What's going on there?
Well, once again, Rick, Donald Trump is in the news and in the fulcrum here. He got involved in a crowded and hotly contested Republican primary for the seat of retiring Senator Rob Portman. To the surprise of many in Ohio, he endorsed author and attorney J.D. Vance. Now, the author of Hillbilly Elegy is someone who has been out of the state, is not known politically, and is someone who was a never-Trumper and did not vote for Donald Trump in 2016. He certainly changed his tune over the following 6 years, and in this primary, he is the Trump candidate. In fact, during his rally in Ohio last Saturday, Donald Trump gave his blessing once again to J.D. Vance. The other candidates are hitting hard in this. Former State Treasurer Josh Mandel, a past Republican nominee for the Senate, is running hard. He and businessman Mike Gibbons almost came to blows during a debate at one point. Jane Timken, a former state party chairman who was helped to reach the Republican helm by Trump, has not caught on, even though she has the endorsement of retiring Senator Portman. And the candidate who just may be sneaking up and surprise everyone is State Senator Matt Dolan, whose family owns the Cleveland Indians. Oops, the Cleveland Guardians. That's another reason Donald Trump doesn't like him, because he believes Cleveland should keep the name of the Indians as a celebrated baseball team. In any event, it's crowded, confused, and no one is calling any winners right now. We'll know Tuesday night.
Well, the economy certainly hasn't been a winner recently. The president and the members of the administration, of course, trying to play it down. Inflation, of course, is transitory, yada, yada, yada. But some key figures making some strange comments this week.
You're talking about Gina Raimondo, the Secretary of Commerce. She said she was surprised at the figures that indicated a shrinking economy. She had little else to say about it, but it should be pointed out that the Department of Commerce is the department that keeps the books. And indeed, when her own department shows that the economy is shrinking under Bidenomics, it is a bit stunning that she has no comment on this. This was the talk for a while at the White House on Friday. And some believe that Gina Raimondo might have served the administration better by saying nothing at all. In the meantime, the economic figures do not portend good news for the administration, and this is important because it's a midterm election year.
Ms. Raimondo wins the Jennifer Granholm Award for Excellence this week, I guess.
Yes.
And you spoke to the president of Georgia.
Right.
And we're not talking about Stacey Abrams, right?
No, we're not. We are talking about Salome Zurabishvili. And if you're listening, Madam President, I worked hard to say your name correctly. She met with six reporters at a private press coffee on Friday morning. I was stunned to find that she said, "Do not rule out the possibility of Vladimir Putin using nuclear weapons in Ukraine," for the simple reason that you're talking about someone who, in her words, is not rational. And she made strong hints about his mental condition. And while she doesn't think he'll use nuclear weapons, just given who he is, it cannot be ruled out on the part of the Russian strongman. Now, as for Russia expanding its attack, she pointed out that her country of Georgia and the neighboring nation of Moldova both have smaller economies and do not have the land or the resources that Ukraine did. They would be targets, and it should be pointed out that in 2008, Vladimir Putin began his policy of expansionism by going into South Ossetia, formerly part of Georgia, and one the Georgian president now calls the unrecognized territory. She does not believe that an attack will come, but in her words, Putin may start a war of nerves. This includes raising the price on electricity on both her nation and neighboring Moldova. Electricity goes to Moldova from the nearby Transnistria, another unrecognized territory that does a lot of business with Russia. One last thing, and that is that all of these countries have their own refugee problems. Georgia, not a large country, has taken in 30,000 refugees from Ukraine. In addition, Moldova, also a small country with a small economy, is home to 100,000 refugees. This creates a burden, and Russia knows it, says Georgia's president.
And you're off to the White House Correspondents' Dinner tonight. What do we expect this year?
Well, remember something. For a lot of us who enjoy the annual NerdBrom, it's nice to have it in person for the first time in 3 years. And Newsmax will have two tables as well as a pre-dinner party there. It's a lot like the old days. In addition, for the first time in 6 years, the President of the United States, whom those who cover him toast at every dinner, will speak that evening. President Trump found it boring. He didn't want to be with reporters, and he was off doing something else. In addition, the president will be the center of attention and entertainment, so Joe Biden had better be funny. They abandoned several years ago the idea of comedians, so the event that was host to Bob Hope and Rich Little and a few comedians of the past will be a little more serious, depending on the president himself for humor.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Have a good time tonight.
I certainly will. And I'll be wearing tux and bow tie as long as I can find someone to tie it for me.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. I would think would know by now how to tie a bow tie and a tuxedo. But anyway, it is 7:18. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning. Then we're back with Cheryl Atkinson.
Watch out for accident activity still on eastbound 66 near the Vienna Metro along the two right lanes, and traffic is jammed from 123. The accident on the inner loop approaching Gallows Road is on the right shoulder, so watch out for a brief delay there. On 270, a disabled vehicle is being reported southbound near Quince Orchard Road, so use extra caution there. Traveling on the outer loop of the Beltway in the vicinity of Bradley Boulevard, you will still find the work zone in the right lane. And on 95 southbound at Powder Mill Road, also some road work in the right lane. So far, that is not causing delays. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly sunny on this Saturday. Temperature is going to warm up a bit, back in the upper 60s today. Some light winds as well. So overall, a great start to the weekend. Don't forget your sunglasses out the door. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 40s to near 50 degrees. We'll have clouds on the increase into your Sunday. A warm frontal boundary will slide in from the south and west, bringing in the chance for some showers. I think the highest likelihood for rain will be during the afternoon and evening. High temperatures on your Sunday into the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
41 degrees now in the nation's capital, 720 on the Saturday morning update.
First thing each morning, O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She is the host of Full Measure. Of course, that's on ABC 7 every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock. Also the author of the bestseller, Slanted, The Smear, and Stonewalled. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we're entering into May this weekend. That means summer travel is right around the corner. We've got a story on it tomorrow. What are we looking at as people get back to normal, the mask mandate tossed out by a judge, but that's still up in the air, so to speak. Tell us what you find in the story.
Well, we asked Scott Thuman to take a look at our tourism industry because so many people work in that industry here in the United States and count on it. You know, obviously it's been devastated in the past couple of years. So what now? And it turns out that for the first time since the pandemic, regardless of what this judge decides on the mask, it seems as though people are starting to feel like they're over it. And they're really embarking on summer travel plans in a huge way, not just domestically, but also overseas. And we're also counting on, at least our industry is, getting a lot of foreign visitors, more than we've had, obviously, for the last couple of years. There are some questions because there are still COVID rules in effect, and apparently we require some testing before people come into the United States that they don't necessarily require when we go to their countries. There's some concern among our tourism industry that that could hurt things. But Scott Thuman is going to travel down to Orlando, which is one of the biggest destinations, as you know, and talk to top experts there in the visitor industry about what they're doing and what they're seeing so far.
So Scott's story is in Florida. Your story is in Southern California this weekend. And this is a story you've been following, what, for 3 years on the solar mandates in the Golden State? What is the very latest there?
Well, yes, I started a couple of years ago because California was the first state in the nation, may still be the only state that has this, to require solar panels on all new homes. And what was so interesting about that when I covered it on the front end was solar advocates disagreed as to whether this is a good idea. Some of them said it was a good idea. This would encourage the use of more green energy. But there were a lot of solar advocates that said solar panels, first of all, it's not a clean process to make them. We buy most of them from China. It can be toxic to dispose of them, and they don't work very well or last very long. So this was sort of the dividing line. Would this be a good thing? So here I am now about 3 years later checking back in, and there's still a divide. It turns out, according to some advocates, that the solar power and the solar users are being subsidized by the electric users because the solar people are being reimbursed for the solar that they put back onto the grid at a rate that's far more, that far exceeds what they're actually giving back. So who picks up the slack for that extra amount of money they're getting? It's the electric ratepayers who do not live in new homes, who cannot afford or do not have solar panels. So that's become very controversial. We're going to hear from an expert who generally advocates for solar energy, but does not necessarily think this is the way to go.
While we're on technology, we've seen and heard the stories about driverless cars. You're doing a story tomorrow. Are we getting closer to actually seeing them on the Beltway?
I think so. I was surprised to learn that there's something like 30 car companies that now have permission to test driverless cars on the roads here in the United States. And I first rode a couple of years ago, I believe it was in Philadelphia. I rode in a driverless Uber where there were still technicians in the front seat. They were still mapping out the streets, but it was really amazing technology. Well, they're already on the streets now in Arizona. A company called Waymo has driverless cars operating in Arizona. In California, they're about to do that. They still have a technician in the front seat there doing nothing, but, you know, the stage of development they are, he's still required, or he or she, to be there. But it was fascinating, and really they've come a long way in the past 3 years in terms of you get in, the robotic voice speaks to you, the car is directed and driven through a central artificial intelligence source. I mean, it really is amazing. And pretty soon in San Francisco, where I was, they're already testing the program with a limited number of people, but they'll be expanding that to other people who are not part of that program very soon.
Were you a little bit nervous?
I was, you know, to sit there and watch the steering wheel kind of working itself and to understand that someone could step out in front of you and the car and the intelligence, the artificial intelligence and the technology is supposed to predict and understand that that's about to happen. But I think, like everything else, we'll get used to it and we'll see a lot more of it. And I wondered how much the cost would be. These were electric cars, electric Jaguars, by the way. And the cost, they say, is going to be, and so far is similar to, you know, Uber and Lyft. So it's going to be very accessible when it comes, and it will be coming to many, probably the big cities first, but a lot of towns near people who are listening.
Cheryl Atkinson, host of Full Measure. It's tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Have a great weekend.
And you too. And you can check out Cheryl's website, CherylAtkinson.com. A lot of great information and stories there. We got 7:30 news coming up next with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. Do stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. An Arlington man is found guilty of a hate crime for attacking two Hispanic construction workers at a site in Northwest D.C. in 2019. Kurt Madsen asked the men to use their power washer. When they said no, he became enraged and started screaming racist and xenophobic epithets. Then he hit one of the victims in the back with a long rod-like construction tool with a sharp metal blade at the end before trying to stab him. A second worker stepped in to stop the attack. Madsen hit him in the face a few times. He was sentenced to about a year and a half in jail, but was given time served as long as he does 2 years of probation. He was in jail for about 5 months before the trial started. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says, judging by the amount of damage Russian forces have done to the Donbas region of his country, they want to make the territory uninhabited.
The occupiers are doing everything to destroy any life at the Donbas territory. Constant cruel bombardments, constant Russian strikes on infrastructure and residential areas.
In his nightly address, Zelensky also thanked Congress for approving a lend-lease program so Ukraine can quickly get weapons. Do you have expired prescription drugs in your medicine cabinet or ones you don't need? Today, you can get rid of them safely at your local police station during National Drug Take-Back Day. Maryland State Police spokesperson Ron Snyder says getting rid of those prescriptions
keeps them out of the hands of people that don't need them, who may misuse them, and it may stop people from ever becoming, an abuser or misuser when it comes to prescription medication.
Drug take-back day starts at 10 and ends at 2. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Giants 14-4. The Caps fell to the Rangers 3-2. They play the Panthers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs on Tuesday. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 66 eastbound near the Vienna Metro Station, you will still find the crash activity, and that is affecting the two right lanes, and traffic is quite slow from 123. In the district, watch out for the new traffic pattern in place on DC 295 northbound between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. Two center lanes are getting by, but the left lane and the lane that becomes the exit lane to Pennsylvania Avenue are blocked with this long-term work zone. Southbound at Pennsylvania Avenue, also a new traffic pattern to watch out for where your lanes are shifting to the right. Now from GarageJoyPair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
today, mostly sunny, a high near 70. Tonight, partly cloudy, then a chance of showers, a low around 50. Right now, 47 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the host of the Thought to Action podcast, the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, always great to join you, Rick.
You know, the wheels just keep coming off at the administration, and they seem to continue to double down on dumb. Headline Chiron at CNN this morning that Biden plans to attack Republicans as his strategy for the midterms, as over 50% of America disapproves of him. So there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And one of the crazy things now is the new disinformation board. And I wanted to get a read from you on that. I mean, the Department of Homeland Security have a little trouble securing the border with Mexico, but now we're going to take on a disinformation campaign because Elon Musk wants to bring free speech back to Twitter. How does all of that strike you?
Well, let me break it down as best I can for the short time we have. First, it's unconstitutional. The government should have no role in determining for the American people to consume what the truth is or is not. The government's the last place to find that, based on my own experience. Secondly, much of the defense of this whole thing, you know, I heard Jen Psaki and others try to defend it, saying, "Oh no, this is for minority communities." That is racist. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it other than, you know, not only does this not make sense constitutionally, it makes no sense operationally. There's reasons to not do it. The idea is here that, you know, your enemy kind of knows what you're focused on by doing this sort of thing. But to me, one of the things which is most evil is this soft racism of low expectations. Rick, think about it. This is supposed to be helping others who can't help themselves. Somehow this, in my judgment, tells me that they think that somehow people who are in minorities are less intelligent than the rest of the population because that's what they're doing. So it's all the things that I've seen over and over again play out in this administration. To summarize it, the Biden administration, and this is an example of it, it's like one long Monty Python skit, and they just can't seem to stop themselves. And this is a perfect example with her singing a Mary Poppins tune talking about misinformation. It is literally like the parrot sketch gone off the rails.
And back in May of 2020, there's a video floating around of her saying that that's the last thing we want, that is the government to get involved in this kind of thing, because she was afraid Trump was going to, you know, crack down. But anyway, speaking of big mouths in the administration, I want to turn to Ukraine. And it just seems like we put the entire laundry list of everything we're sending, all the weaponries. Why are we telegraphing that to the Russians? Why don't we just say we're sending X billions of dollars of weaponry and leave it at that and just get it in there? And if it leaks out somewhere along the way, great. But why do you, you know, publish the list?
Well, can you imagine Dwight D. Eisenhower getting up on the 5th of June and laying out all the nomenclature, everything they're going to use on the Normandy beach? Hey, just in case you're wondering, here's every unit, every piece of hardware. That's what we're doing. And I believe, I don't think it's by accident. I don't. I mean, look, I'm not the only one seeing this. I talk to people all the time. And so this, what I call military virtue signaling, where you lay out everything down to the nomenclature, down to the how many we're sending, that would be, you know, people were prosecuted during World War One for treason for telling the enemy what we were sending against the Germans. So I don't know what's happened over the past 100 years, but somehow now giving the enemy a full update on everything you're giving someone is the thing to do. This is dangerous. It's unheard of. And simply put, I think this is more evidence of the Biden administration not only living out a Monty Python skit, but actually giving Putin the ability to defend against these weapons that they're sending to Ukraine for purposes of keeping this going. I believe at this point the Biden administration has zero interest in trying to stop the Russian conflict. He wants to make all the inflation, the Putin inflation, he wants to make everything that's going on all about Putin, trying to distract from his own completely failing, where we're even in almost, you know, in a contraction of our economy. He wants that to be Putin's fault. And so I believe what you're seeing here is essentially an evil policy to tell them what's going on, so the Russians can respond adequately and keep everything going. It's truly evil.
Well, it's always the blame game. They're still blaming Trump for the border problems. And the border was fairly secure at the end of the Trump administration. So I don't know how you blame that on him. The border policy, that's been a mess for decades. But the security at the border was actually pretty good before the Biden administration came in. I want to turn to another topic. This is an editorial that you wrote. It was published at the Washington Times. Headline on it. And again, this is penned by Tony Schaefer, Losing Second Amendment Rights, Disarm and Prepare to Die. Subhead, as crime rises, responsibly armed citizens stop more violent crime than cops. And you had some interesting statistics to back it up.
So, yeah, I don't want to go through all this because we don't have a lot of time to go discuss each one. But this basically, if people will go check it out, they will see that we've been able to lay out a statistical model showing how armed citizens and properly trained can actually do a great deal of good. I would argue more good than police. Police are never there when you need them, except when, you know, you're maybe going down 95 and they pull you over.
But you don't need them then.
You don't need them then, but they're there. So my point being is that if you look at this, it shows that the benefits of armed citizens outweigh any restrictions on legally armed citizens. And one of the things we've notable from Ukraine, for goodness sake, is that armed citizens are making a huge difference against a large adversary. So we're arguing that, you know, the Biden administration is literally going the wrong way again, as if anything else we're talking about this morning is about them doing anything right. In this case, all the progressive control cities, all the gun control, all that does is hamper law-abiding citizens from being armed and prepared to defend themselves, making them essentially an essential victim. So this is where we've got to examine this as a nation, of how these policies to disarm law-abiding citizens is not in the interest of anyone, let alone individuals who have to live in cities and try to survive the ongoing crime rate. So that's basically what the article says. I think people will get a lot out of it.
Well, what strikes me is there are so many guns out there at this point, so many guns. And the prosecutors are not prosecuting gun violations in the major cities. I mean, you know, people are unloading automatic weapons all around D.C., people getting killed every day, and the prosecutors just let them back out on the streets.
That's what's notable. These guys will shoot people 4 and 5 times, and they have to let them back out. So it's not the gun. It's the people who go out and get the gun and shoot it. So, yes, that's obvious that that's what they're doing.
I don't know what it takes for legislators to have some common sense, and especially prosecutors to have some common sense. This recidivism and the soft on crime, I mean, the carjackings, you got 13-year-olds carjacking around town, 13-year-olds committing murder? Are you serious?
Rick, this is a policy choice by the progressive left. This is not random. This is what their policy is. And everything you just outlined is what legislators need to sit down and fix. Otherwise, you will continue to see the chaos we experience in the inner cities. And by the way, seems to be focused primarily in minority communities where most of this crime is committed. Imagine that.
And Cheryl Atkinson mentioned the funding that George Soros has given to those progressive prosecutors all around the country. She talked about that last week, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, somebody's got to wake up.
Well, I think people are awake. It's just that the people with the money are, unfortunately, the ones who are being able to fund all this. Think about it. I mean, most people understand what you and I are speaking about, that law-abiding citizens who are properly armed are able to better defend themselves and others. The best way to destroy that is disarm them, make the police hobbled by the Black Lives Matter movement and make it so there's total chaos. And again, this is not random. This is a policy choice. It's being funded. It'd be great if some other force other than Soros could come out there and help fund to elect good people who can actually stop this insanity. So that's our best hope.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer at the London Center for Policy Research, and you can check out his opinion piece in the Washington Times. Tony, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
KT McFarland up next, but right now we head to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Michelle Murray is there this morning.
A new accident now being reported on eastbound 66 before the Beltway, exit 64A, and that is blocking the left lane. In addition, there is another accident to watch out for, eastbound on 66 near the Vienna Metro, and that is blocking the right side of the roadway with traffic very slow from 123. Also, Maryland, still a work zone in place on 95 southbound at exit 29B. That's the exit for Powder Mill Road, and that is affecting the right lane, but so far not causing any delays. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly to mostly sunny on this Saturday. Temperature is going to warm up a bit, back in the upper 60s today. Some light winds as well. So overall, a great start to the weekend. Don't forget your sunglasses out the door. Later on tonight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 40s to near 50 degrees. We'll have clouds on the increase into your Sunday. A warm frontal boundary will slide in from the south and west, bringing the chance for some showers. I think the highest likelihood for rain will be during the afternoon and evening. High temperatures on your Sunday into the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
And we're at 41 degrees in the nation's capital, and we're at 746 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the bestseller Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, KT. And we've been talking about the administration and the levels of incompetence across the board, the misjudgments, the misinformation, the lies coming out of the administration. As an example, the incompetence handling the economy. The stock market down 939 points yesterday, GDP negative 1.4, the CPI up 8.5%. Goodness gracious.
And it's going to get a lot worse by election time. And with the Biden administration in the White House, it's going to get even worse in the years following. He thinks, well, 2023 might be a recession. Look, it's an easy fix. Yet the loony left, which drives the Democrat Party and dictates to the Biden White House, is not going to allow anybody to fix it. Unleash American energy. Open up American oil and natural gas production. It will give U.S. energy independence, which is great for us and for our economy. It'll solve inflation. But it'll also make the U.S. energy dominant. Now, what do I mean by that? It will draw, because we will be the world's largest producer of energy, it will drive oil and gas prices down. Our companies can make a profit if oil is above $40 or $50 a barrel. The other countries, Russia, Iran, they need it to be much higher because it pays for everything else. So American energy independence, American energy dominance, it'll cure inflation. It'll bankrupt Russia and Iran. It will preclude Putin from continuing the war in Ukraine and prevent him from attacking elsewhere. It'll make America Europe's predominant energy source, and it'll put China, the world's most needy energy importer, in a position of having to import, or at least to be nice to American energy producers, but they won't do it.
So let's turn to the new Department of Homeland Security's Disinformation Governance Board. And the person that they have chosen to lead it is guilty of disinformation already.
Look, it's like putting a fox in charge of the hen house, but a fox with a known record for killing chickens. I mean, okay, I get the fact that Russian disinformation is a problem. It's always been a problem. And they claim that this is all about countering Russian disinformation, but it's a ruse. It's really about crushing free speech of Republicans, censoring them, and censoring anybody who disagrees with the Biden administration plan. And it's something out of George Orwell, 1984. This is not for the good of the people. This is for the good of the Democrats and the deep state.
Let's turn to the first place they could maybe enforce some of this misinformation, they could walk down the hall to the secretary's office and talk to Alejandro Mayorkas. The misinformation that he's presenting about the status of the southern border, again, it is just mind-boggling, KT.
Yeah, the list grows, right? Who thought it could get worse? It's going to get worse. Well, another example is just the Democrats, they're ruthless. They think, well, we're going to have an open border. We're going to get millions of new voters into the U.S., and they'll all vote for the Democrats. They know, the Democrats know that the American people don't support their socialist totalitarian agenda. No problem. They'll just import a whole lot of new voters who are going to vote for them, and it's mostly Hispanics. They figure, well, we own the Hispanic vote. They don't worry about the human trafficking part of it. They don't worry about the fact that it promotes lawlessness. They're not worried about whoever else is coming across the border along with people who are seeking economic opportunity. They're just going to get Democrat voters. But as crafty and ruthless as they are, they're actually not very smart. I mean, think of how this is going to work out, Rick. The United States has a labor shortage, particularly at the low end. You see help wanted ads everywhere. What will happen is that these migrants, they'll come in, they'll take those low-end jobs. Democrats are going to give them citizenship. They think they've got their thing solved, but it won't. What it'll do, it will solve America's low-end labor shortage problem. But these people are all going to be in small businesses. They're all going to work in small businesses, own small businesses. They're pro-family. They're religious. They're all going to vote Republican. So the Democrats think, ha-ha, we found our way to a new permanent majority. But what they've actually done is increase the potential Republican voters. If they've looked at the polls lately, half of Hispanics already vote Republican. These new migrants are going to vote even more Republican in the future.
And how do you contrast?
Can we go on to Ukraine? Foreign policy?
You know, the ghost of Jimmy Carter seems to be back. I know he's still with us, but my goodness, it's like he's in the White House again.
Yeah, and here's I'm old enough to remember, and I worked in the Reagan administration. Actually, I was in the Nixon and Ford administration, watched Jimmy Carter get elected, watched his failed rescue mission in Iran, where American diplomats were held hostage. And that marked, that foreign policy failure of incompetence, marked really the beginning of the end for Jimmy Carter. That plus inflation led by high energy prices from the Middle East. So what's going to mark the end of the Democrats and the Bidens? Well, Afghanistan, we'll look back at that and say that was shambolic. That was like Jimmy Carter's failed rescue mission. We couldn't. Everybody may have thought America had bad policies, but they always did it competently. This was incompetent. And now what's happening with Ukraine and Russia, and the war will go on. The Biden administration is just going to look more and more incompetent on the foreign policy part as time goes on, just like Jimmy Carter did. So do you have any more topics about how bad they are, or should
conclusion? This whole progressive movement, KT, the scary part of this is, what does it mean for our democracy?
Well, they don't want you to have a democracy. I mean, they believe in social. Look at the last 5-8 years of crises. Every solution has been bigger and bigger government. So the solution in 2000, and I would even say to the neocon Republicans, war on terror, let's centralize everything in the federal government. 2008, the economic Wall Street collapse, let's pull all those powers to the federal government to decide on. Oh, we have the George Floyd riots. Clearly that's a problem of law enforcement. We've got to pull all that to the federal government. Oh, education issues? Well, we definitely have to pull that to the federal government. We don't think the housewives of Loudoun County are smart enough to know how their children should be educated and what they should be taught. Elections? Oh, well, we've got to nationalize and federalize those. The answer to every one of these things is more federal power. That's very un-American. Let me just summarize by saying Jimmy Carter was bad, and it made Ronald Reagan possible. Reagan was elected, reelected by landslides. The vice president became president for the equivalent of the third Reagan term. The Democrats were finished. They did not have power for a generation, because even when a Democrat was elected, Bill Clinton, he was a centrist Democrat, and he continued those Republican reforms, like making a work requirement for welfare. The liberal left was destroyed for a generation. Today, the liberal left, they're far worse than Jimmy Carter's liberals. They're socialists. They're totalitarian socialists. So 2022 is going to bring a landslide of Republicans into the House and the Senate. 2024 will bring a Republican into the White House, and the so-called progressive, but I call it loony, left will be dead for a generation. But this is going to be different because the Republicans, once they are in power, they're going to investigate all the corruption and malfeasance of the Democrats. Not just the incompetence. People get away with incompetence, but not corruption and malfeasance. So those people ought to start lawyering up now. Hunter Biden's laptop, Biden family corruption, Russia hoax, all those who perpetrated it. The 50 Democrat intelligence officers who insisted Hunter Biden's laptop was just Russian disinformation. It's been an unholy trinity of the deep state, the Democrats, and their media allies that have driven the political agenda for years. It's soon going to be exposed for what it is. And frankly, Rick, to quote from the Game of Thrones, winter is coming. And it will be long and harsh.
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.